We are back with the Junior NBA Coaches Corner podcast today, talking about turning around a program and one that had not been successful in a long, long time. It was a tough job, but it's been a fun, fun role for the Rutgers basketball team.
Here to help us dive in is their head coach, Steve Peichel. And if you don't get inspired when you listen to Steve, well, I just can't help you.
Welcome to the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Here are your hosts, Dallin Cuff and Monica McNutt.
What's up, folks? Welcome back into another episode of the Junior NBA Coaches Corner podcast. Alongside Monica McNutt, I'm Dallin Cuff. My voice is shot. Yours seems like a little bit of struggling out there in Vegas. How are we, Mon?
Oh, we're good. The Vegas heat is just so undeniable.
Undeniable.
It's just undeniable. As soon as you step out the airport, it's like, woo. But other than that, we're good. Fresh off Chicago. WNBA All-Star was fantastic. Chicago was a great host city. Great energy around that. And now on to some Summer League action.
Summer League action. Ron Harper Jr. will be playing tonight. I know we're recording this a couple days early, but we're talking to his coach, Steve Peichel, Rutgers coach, about turning around a program. We will get into it. He was at Stony Brook. It's his first head coaching job prior to Rutgers, his six seasons at Rutgers. And I've been able to watch his journey up close. When we used to play as a New York, played at Columbia, so in the New York area, we play Stony Brook every year. And getting then called a lot of their games and watched him build that program. And it was just so impressive to see where they were, to not be able to win America East games, to being able to dominate that conference, get themselves into the tournament or in position to be in the tournament out of a one big league. And now what he's done at Rutgers. I mean, you beat Purdue number one overall this past year. You get to the tournament for the first time in 30 years. That's just the accolades keep being stacked up.
We talked with Coach Peichel prior to last season on my show with MSG, and you could just kind of see that there was this confidence about his group. I mean, he's super thrilled about the university, and I'm sure we'll hear him sing the praises of just Rutgers in general. But it's cool to see coaches that are kind of, I won't say counted out, but that's a tall task to bring a team back to prominence after missing the tournament for 30 years or whatever
it
may be. But you could just kind of see it in him. And so I'm excited to catch up with him today in terms of what happened. I was in studio when they beat Purdue. Was it with Spitola or Farnham? I can't remember. But we were like, oh, my God. It's such a great moment, though.
And if it was Farnham, he would have just jumped up and run around with his shirt off, probably.
What's the Farnham? I got to look back at the clips now. But anyway, it's so cool to see a program kind of make these moments in their turnaround.
Yeah, I mean, and it's been impressive because at first I did a couple of their games when he first took over the job and talking to him and Carl Hobbs and Brandon Knight, they're different coaches. And it was about toughness, defense, building a brand. It's a skill development. You start to really layer that stuff on. But the foundation of that team was built years ago, and now they've continued to improve. We'll talk about player development as well because that's critical to a program in a talent-rich area in New Jersey. But everybody's coming to New Jersey to take your players. Like, it is hard to keep guys in and around that tri-state area. They've done a better job of that, and we'll continue to do that as we go forward. So with no further ado, let's get with Steve Peichel right now, talking about turning around a program. And now Coach Peichel joins us. Coach, thank you so much for your time. Great to have you on. Excited to have this conversation as we talk about turning around a program. And I mean, I've been amazed, to be honest, watching what you guys have accomplished in now six seasons there in New Jersey. Given the program had not been to a tournament since 1991, you've gone back-to-back years. Beat Purdue number one last year on one of the craziest plays of the season, Ron Harper Jr. making a 67-foot shot or so. But before we get to all the great stuff that happened in recent years, when you first came on board, as people think about rebuilding a program and trying to establish themselves in a brutal Big Ten, what were like your priorities? How do you attack that role when you first get there?
You know, like one day at a time. Actually, I had more hair back then and less gray hair. But, you know, 6 years ago, I was fortunate to get the job, you know, at Rutgers, and was very thankful for Pat Hobbs believing in me, our athletic director. And, you know, but when I took over the job, you know, a lot of people said, you know, it couldn't be done and we hadn't had a lot of success. But, you know, I just really believed in the university. I believed in my coaching staff. I think it's very important to hire, you know, great people. Carl Hobbs has won two national championships. He was coach of the year in the Atlantic 10 at George Washington University. Brandon Knight, you know, played in the NBA. His numbers retired at Pittsburgh. He's a New Jersey guy, an unbelievable, you know, young coach. I believed in the people around our program, but we had a long journey, 14 teams in the league, and we were clearly 14th, and maybe we were 16th out of 14. We were probably closer in that direction. So, you know, and got some players, obviously, that believed in Rutgers. So I think very important to start out a culture with you know, great staff and the people around your program. And we had a lot of great things here to sell at Rutgers. It's a great university. It's a great location. And now we played in the best league in the country. The Big Ten got the most teams in the NCAA tournament the last few years. So you obviously play in a league with brand names. So we were able to, you know, work hard to get a Ron Harper and get a Geo Baker and get a Paul Mulcahy. And, you know, those are blue collar guys that wanted to prove to people that they were better than their rankings. And I think as a staff, we just went about great chemistry, developing guys that people didn't really look at as Big Ten players. And then the crowds came and that helped, you know. Jersey Mike's became a tough ticket and we played a fun style, and, you know, and just blessed that I surrounded myself with really good people. And, you know, I think we're going to be really good this year. So the culture hopefully just continues and we continue to do really good things here on the banks.
Coach, we had you on MSGPM at the beginning of last season, I think.
That's right. That's right.
And you had this confidence about you, right? And I always say that teams that are about to turn a corner, internally they know before everybody else gets hit. What do you think was sort of the point where you got buy-in from your guys? Do you remember it, or is it just kind of this group of guys that you've been able to recruit in the 6 years now?
I tell you, you know, we lost some games early in the season, and honestly, it's the end of the world when you lose a game for everybody. But I also think it's the beginning. You know, it got us really focused, you know, on the games that were ahead. It got us back to what we needed to do, which was defend and be tough. And, you know, so we lost a tough home game to Lafayette on a last second play. And, you know, I remember meeting with the team the next day, like, we're good. We didn't play good last night and we didn't play well, but if we get back to what we need to do, we're going to be fine. And, you know, that kind of motivated us. I think it put the right focus on us and it took away all the people, you know, the phones are a big part of our guys now. And then I said, listen, they don't believe in you anymore. And that's good. You know, like it's us in this room. We put the sweat in, we work. Let's believe in ourselves. We've been there before, you know, and next thing you know, we're in our league play and we beat four ranked teams and the only team unranked to ever do that. You know, we started really, you know, putting it together. And as you know, the crowds and, you know, the intensity and the fun, you know, came back to playing. And, you know, our guys just did a really good job. And then we knew we could play anybody. When you beat four ranked teams and, you know, in a span, mm-hmm. you knew you could play with anybody. And you were confident we were going to go to the NCAA tournament, be able to play with anybody and that kind of thing. So, you know, you learn from losses too. Like everyone thinks, you know, I know the outside world, the fans, like it's the end of the world and I get it, you know, but I've lost a lot of games in my career. I'm a coach, you know, let's get off the mat. How do you get off the mat? It's really the most important thing. And we were able to do that and do it in a big way.
Coach, you did mention the crowds. My first ever college game was at the Rack. When that place was packed, it did not go well for the Columbia Lions that day. It was memorable, but for all the wrong reasons. It's a tough place to play and it's gotten back to there, but you say get up off the mat. You guys have dealt with adversity on a pretty high level. Like you were the COVID year, you guys were going to the tournament and that was a huge deal. And that's taken away. Then you have the team does go to the tournament the next year. And then you have to deal with a lot of coaches having to deal with. You had some guys transfer, some key guys, Miles Johnson, Jacob Young, Montrez Mathis, other guys left. And that made obviously the job harder. And then you mentioned early on this season, what is the key to overcoming adversity as you're building a program? What is the key to getting up off the mat?
Well, the one thing when you're building a program, there's always adversity. Like, so I've never taken a job and I wish someday that to have a job like that where there's no adversity. Like, so that's all I've ever had to do in my whole career. I was with Jim Calhoun year one at UConn. His first year was his only losing season. At University of Connecticut, we were last place team in by my senior year, we were a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. So 4 years later, but the only thing we hit in between was adversity. As a coach at all my stops, it's just been adversity. I actually, you know, I kind of welcome it. I know it's part of the journey. I wish I didn't have to hit so much of it, but you know, we go through that year, that, you know, COVID year, we won 20 games. We were playing as good a basketball. We went on the road to Purdue, who never loses on senior night, and we beat Purdue. You know, that was our first road win that year. We had 19 home wins. We were going to be in the NCAA tournament, and then we're warming up and the season's over. And by the time the plane landed, the NCAA tournament was canceled. It was the most, you know, crazy year, hugging your guys as they're leaving them. Like, what just happened? We worked so hard to get there, and we hadn't been to the tournament in 30 years. We got there, then the COVID hits. Turn around the next year, you have to do it again. People, oh, you really didn't go to the tournament. Oh, no, we went. We would have went that year. I think we would have been a 7 seed. Like, we could win some games in that tournament. And then we had to go to Minnesota and win our last game of the season there on the road in overtime. And every year it's been, you know, like that for me. Luckily, you know, you're up for the challenge. You've been through a lot of obstacles. And even this year, I think we're going to be really good, and I expect obstacles. That's just the way it is. And I kind of like going through obstacles, you know, in some kind of a sick way. I enjoy that part of the journey. And I know the journey is, you know, it's never just, you know, you win. It's how you win. It's how you fight through losses. It's how you fight through injuries. It's, you know, difficult times of your schedule. Like, that's part of the fun for me, is figuring it out. And, you know, I'm lucky. I'm surrounded by good people that want to figure it out with me.
All right, Coach. No conversation with one of today's leaders of an institution's team that happens to play basketball would be complete without asking about the world of the Wild Wild West transfer portal.
Yeah.
This is what I will say before we get into that conversation. You sort of have this very confident, matter of fact, like, you keep talking about maybe you're a little bit odd for enjoying obstacles. And so I imagine that your approach is now is just a part of the landscape, and it still allows us to compete. But you mentioned the guys that you hugged after the COVID year and how important it is to have buy-in as you're building a program. And so the shift, how do you deal with the shift of guys coming essentially in and out?
Well, I tell you, I mean, it's really changed the conversations with recruits and, you know, all the new obstacles with the extra COVID year and the name, image, and likeness and the transfer portal. We're one of the only programs this year in the country that didn't have anyone in the transfer portal, which, you know, my staff, again, does a great job. But I think we build our program that way. Like, when the guys leave, I feel like, you know, I should have guys below them that maybe didn't play as much or were younger that are ready to play now. And they feel that, you know, opportunity. And, you know, I think they're excited about that opportunity. But these are huge obstacles now. And, you know, you really can't look at guys as four-year guys anymore. You just, you know, 1 year at a time, that's what we take. Try to treat the guys great. Try to develop them. Try to value them. You know, whether you're the ninth man or the 11th man or the starter, like, there's huge value. And you could go from one day being the ninth man to being the, you know, fifth starter, fourth starter, you know, the following year. If you stay the course and if you're patient, you know, we're a microwave world now. Everyone wants everything today. You know, and I say that to my high school guys, like, you know, remember your freshman year of high school. Don't tell me about your senior year, because you're now going to a whole nother level in the Big Ten. You know, you can have obstacles, maybe not play as much, maybe not, you're not ready for that. Constant conversations with guys. Try to keep them focused on the right things, which is, you want to graduate, you want to get better, you want to make sure you're headed in those directions. And, you know, some of those conversations help you, you know, with guys on the transfer portal. But you also, as a coach, got to understand that transfer portal is a valuable weapon. We were able to go out and get, you know, a player this year that I think is going to help us a great deal. Cam Spencer in the transfer portal. He can really shoot the ball. He fills a huge void for us, you know, in that department. But I believe in my younger guys. And so I'm thankful they all stayed, and I praise the guys that stay. I think that's important. We talk about all the transfers. He's number one. He's number two. How about doing an article on the guys that stayed?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's exciting too. That guy's pretty good, and he's decided to stay. So, you know, I appreciate those guys that have stayed along this journey, you know, with us here at Rutgers.
Coach, what's your approach to recruiting? Because, I mean, frankly, whenever those guys left last spring, I remember calling Coach Hobbs and being like, what the hell's going on? You guys, this whole team seems intact. Everything's going the right way. Like, what's going on here? And I know guys made some their decisions personally and academically, whatever, that's fine. But you guys overcame that. And now, but what is your approach to recruiting in this current landscape, portal versus high school kids, especially in the space that you occupy? In the Big Ten, it's still a brutal conference, but you're still it's not like it's Duke or it's Carolina. Those brand names are a little different. They operate in a different space. How do you manage to maintain this success in this current climate?
Those are obstacles again every year that you have to kind of, fight through. We lost guys last year, I think the extra COVID year helps guys move on. Now being able to be eligible right away gets guys thinking about, that opportunity. And I always say to players, I appreciate the 1 year. I appreciate the 2 years. I appreciate the 3 years. If you think you need to, go somewhere else to help achieve the goals that you have, I'm pro their opportunities. I'm pro, their choices. Now, I chose as a basketball player to stay at UConn for 5 years, and there were obstacles at UConn, every single year, playing time obstacles, injury obstacles, the program obstacles. I love that journey. I think you start missing that journey as you keep jumping places, because you're going to be in another journey in the new spot too. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes if you can show people that there's light at the end of the tunnel, that there's more playing time, that there's a degree, that there's a university that's going to support you, if you stay on this journey, I think, those are the things that you have to promote, to your guys. But I also appreciate the guys. Miles Johnson left. He went to a great engineering program at UCLA near his house. I think that was awesome for him. And you know what it was awesome for? It was awesome for Cliff. Now he played 35 minutes and he's now proven he's probably the best big man in the Big Ten. One opportunity opens up another opportunity for someone else. And, Ron Harper kept his name in the draft this year. He had one more year of eligibility. He's great. He's playing for the Toronto right now. That opened up opportunities now for Mawat Mag and Dean Reber, who I think are really good players, and Andre Hyatt, and they're going to get an opportunity now. So when you're building a program, I know those guys were leaving eventually, so I don't become shocked. I wish Geo Baker had another year of eligibility, but he can't stay for 10 years. He has to leave. But now that opened up opportunities for, our players that were patiently waiting underneath them. And I think they're going to have really good years this year because of that opportunity. So you got to keep navigating these different issues that come up. But, I enjoy it. I'm still a people person. I believe in bringing in a freshman, and he's got to get better, and having that opportunity when he's a sophomore to play more and junior, so I still believe in that, but I also respect the opinions and the decisions that kids have to make now. I didn't have any decisions. Nobody wanted me. Thankfully Jim Calhoun did. So I didn't have 1,000 things to think about. They have 1,000 things to think about now. And I, respect that.
We literally could do this all day. I know we're not gonna do that. All right. So on that note, Coach, how do you streamline for your guys? Because you're right. They have 1,000 things to think about, whether they ultimately want to continue to be a member of Rutgers and a Scarlet Knight, whether they want to dabble in X NIL option, whether they want to engage with so-and-so on the phone. They do have 1,000 things to think about. So how, when they step in the gym with you, or if they're in mealtime with you guys, which is just as important in terms of building chemistry and relationships, how do you make the main thing remain the main thing for them?
That's a constant here, just kind of reminding guys why you're here. You're here. We're trying to win a national championship, trying to graduate. Sometimes you got to bring them in. You're trying to be a real good basketball player, bring them back to, put the phone down. Okay. I know you got a million NIL opportunities. You didn't come here for NIL. You came here to get a degree. You can't do a million things and be good at it. Those are the things that you constantly got to, remind the guys. A lot of them I sit down with and what do you want to do? I want to play pro basketball. I want to graduate. Okay. Well, those are the two things. Right now you're doing 7 other things that aren't helping you, in those areas. And, a big part of this is they have way more distractions than I used to when I was a player. It's just the way it is. The phone distracts them. The phone takes you away from what you need to be doing. And sometimes it's the work that you got to do to get to the NBA level. You're not doing that. And got to constantly be reminding them of their priorities and the priorities of the team too. And so I think my staff does a real good job of that. And I try to do a real good job of that. And I also understand I have 4 kids myself that are all athletes. I know how easily distracted they are. And I always tell my kids that, the phone doesn't help you achieve the goal of being in great shape. The phone doesn't help you achieve the goal of being a great basketball player. The phone doesn't help you with your academics sometimes. So you got to put that thing down and you got to get back to, you know, what's going to get you where you need to be. So a constant focus on their goals and on the goals of the team are what we constantly are reminding our players about.
On that note, Coach, how do you manage like player to skill development in the course of the season? Because there's so much going on and there's so much you're focusing on with team stuff, and you're in the weight room, they got all the stuff going on in school, but you still need to, and your teams have done this. They've shown that individually and collectively year over year. So how do you approach individual skill development while you're in the middle of the season?
You know, you are a player and you guys understand all the different responsibilities that you have. I think as a staff, you know, there's a lot of ways to develop players. Okay. When they're tired, you can't necessarily have them in the gym, but you can have them watching film. You know, their mind can develop while their legs are resting. You know, then sometimes their legs need to get moving and you need to teach on the court, you know, that way too. So there's a lot of ways to develop. And then sometimes it's just a quote from a guy. It's just a guy's in a shooting slump. And, you know, like we found a quote, you know, through social media. So some ways social media can help you and send that to them at nighttime, send clips, you know, to them. I'm big in development. And I also think that when players are young, they need to improve and get better. And we got to figure out what's the best way to make a basketball player better. And some learn by film, some learn by, and I diagram plays and I bring players in and I say, you need to diagram this play for me. And they can't do it. And I'm like, okay, well, you're my point guard. You got to, you know, like in teach them different ways that they can help each other. But development's huge. It's your staff too. I got experienced staff that helps me a great deal. They have different methods, which I love sometimes because their method may be better than teaching a kid than my method, you know, too. So we have a constant game plan. We look at their hours and when they're free and what their weaknesses are. If it's free throws, we got to get them in the gym. We got to find an hour. If it's watching film, we got, hey, he doesn't know what he's defensively off the ball. He's not where he needs to be. We got to watch film. And so I'm blessed that way. And I take a lot of pride in that. I want people to say, this is the one thing. I want people to say Rutgers players graduate and they get better. And the one thing we've done in 6 years, every single guy that has graduated from here signed a pro contract. I'm proud of that. You know, that was on scholarship. And guys have gotten better. And, you know, that's something I want the pro teams to say, hey, you know, he gets his guys ready. They know how to defend. They know how to play. When guys are open, they share the ball. And that's part of the development. And that's every day you got to do some of that.
All right, Coach, last one for me. Stony Brook is a little different from Rutgers, right? Knocking off the number one team. And we were in studio that day. I remember. Was Chris Spatola with me? I can't remember who was with me. But I remember that game. So all of these things are now new and different for you. And I think sometimes players just are like coaches, whatever, coaches this, that, and other. But coaches also learning, growing, stretching. So in your 6 years at Rutgers, what have you learned? What has caused you to stretch the most?
Monica, you like that play I diagrammed, right, for Ron Harper at the end there? Get the ball to the guy. Get the ball to the guy that scored 30 points and let him, you know, finish the game from half court. That was just the way I diagrammed it up. And
I'm sure. We were like, oh my God.
It was an unbelievable environment. As good a college basketball game too. Like they made huge plays and they were really good. And we made a lot of plays leading up to that last shot, but the crowd was unbelievable. And you know, that's what makes college basketball different and exciting. And Purdue has a huge following too. They had brought some fans too. So it was really, you know, all the great things of college basketball probably happened, you know, that night. But there's challenges, you know, in everything, you know, that you do as a program and as a basketball coach. They all come together when a group of people believe that you could do something. You know, we had never beaten number one, you know, you know, we didn't have Geo Baker that night either. So we had our leading scorer, one of our leading scorers, and our most clutch player. Geo's been a clutch player for us. But I remember in those timeouts, like as your program grows, what's the greatest thing about Ron Harper, his freshman year, he would sit in the huddle and he would, you know, kind of look at me for guidance. Well, fast forward that 3 years. And then he's like, Coach, I'm good. Get me the ball. Like, you know, it's just And that takes time to do that. And that's where I think you're losing out now on, you know, college out when kids transfer and go to the next place. Like, and Ron built up that equity with me and I grew with him. He grew with me. And it's the same thing in coaching. I learned a lot at Stony Brook. Okay. That program had never had a winning season in the American East when I took it over. The roof was leaking. The facility was good. No one ever heard of the school. They thought it was a convalescent home. There was Stony Brook. I just dropped my aunt off there. You know, like that was what I got asked first there, you know, but that program grew. And I know as a coach, I grew. I was a young head coach then. And, you know, I grew, you know, and my ways, I think in a lot of ways, when I got to Rutgers, I said, you know, I learned a lot of lessons while nobody was watching at Stony Brook. Mm-hmm. And now when I got the Rutgers job, I already lived through tough seasons and, you know, recruiting mistakes and maybe some other mistakes that I made. But now when everyone was watching, I already been through it. You know, I knew at the end of games to put the ball in my best player's hands. You know, I knew, you know, a lot of different things about the building process. I knew you better hire a good staff with people around you. So I think as a coach, you know, you grow with your experiences too. You learn from some of the great things you did and you also you're at that place again at the next build and you're deciding to play your freshmen or play your seniors. And then like, all right, who's part of the future and who's going to help me next year? You know, so a lot of those things. So I've been blessed that I was able to live through some mistakes. And I say this, the microwave world, you know, year three at Stony Brook, we didn't win any games and the AD brought me in and gave me a new contract. You're working hard. You're doing a great job. The microwave world, I would have been replaced there and someone else would have tried to come in and, you know, that kind of thing. So I really believe in that. And I believe in it with my players too. You got to learn, you got to get better. That's what it's all about. And you don't have to jump ship and stay the course. Tell your fans too, when you lose a game, stay the course. You're good. And that's what we've been able to do. Stay the course, keep swinging, believe in my defensive coach. We rebound, we defend. Eventually you'll make shots in games, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, I've been lucky that people have been patient enough with me. And, you know, I love my job here. Rutgers is an awesome university too. You guys, the growth here, I mean, I'm in a $125 million facility here. The university is exploding. We're in the Big Ten. It's the best league. We just added two new teams to the conference, UCLA,
that's where we're going.
USC. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, this is awesome. And people say, oh, it's going to make it harder. Well, it's hard before. It's always hard. Yeah. You know, so let's add a nice trip to LA. You guys can come out there with us. We'll enjoy some sun. And hopefully we'll win a couple games.
You said nobody's watching at Stony Brook, Coach. I was watching. It was Tommy Benton on one team, Brian Dore. I was out there and watching that thing be built, which was fun because when we used to play, I think they were D2. I mean, they were D2 like only 20 years ago and became D1 and that whole process. And I mean, that what you accomplished there is it was remarkable. What's going on at Rutgers, to your point, is outstanding. But I want to end this thing because we have to touch on the fact that, like, obviously USC, UCLA come in. The Big Ten and the SEC. Everybody wants to be there right now. Everybody, you guys made the move, you know, 10 years ago, one of the first big dominoes to fall, but that now looks like one of the most prescient moves in the history of, you know, college sports in terms of the financial security and the leagues you play in, the quality, both football and basketball in particular, not to mention the other sports. But as you sit where you are, because I talked to a lot of coaches in the ACC, Pac-12, like there are different feelings based on what conference affiliation you're in right now when you watch this landscape. So what do you think about where we are in college sports and the business of college sports?
Well, I mean, certainly changed in my 6 years. So there were none of these conversations 6 years ago, really. And now the landscape has changed. I think you got to be prepared to change with the landscape. I got to change my recruiting. Our presentations now to recruits are different than they were 6 years ago. You know, I'm talking about name, image, and likeness. I'm like, I just want to talk about basketball and graduating, but that's where I was 6 years ago. And now, you know, these are conversations that you have to have, but Rutgers is a world-class university. And I think, you know, adding UCLA and USC, you got two more world, you got Michigan in this league. You got Northwestern. I mean, I always say it's the company you keep in life. And I'm very thankful that the decision was made a long time ago. I wasn't here. I'm sure whoever the leaders were at that time at this university were getting criticized for making those decisions. Maybe they knew some things that other people didn't know. And they made a decision which is going to help Rutgers University. I mean, the league now is going from the biggest media market, New York, to Chicago, obviously, or based, and now to LA. I mean, you know, we're going to obviously recruit nationally now, and we have anyways, but now recruit for students, recruit for our engineering school here, recruit for our business school. I mean, it is, you know, just exciting the things that, you know, that media market now adds, and when you're adding those kind of brands. But yeah, it's changing. The leadership has to be able to change with the times. I think obviously football drives a lot of this. Mm-hmm. And I love football Saturdays. We got Greg Schiano, the best football coach in the country here too. Rutgers football is going to be awesome. He's going to continue to do a great job. And, you know, I love what's happening. I mean, nobody likes changes, but I think, you know, life is full of changes and you got to be prepared for them. But you got to take advantage of them too. And we're now in a world-class league and have been for 10 years. That tells you a lot about Rutgers. It's a world-class university in a world-class location, building world-class facilities. And we got Jersey Mike's too on a Thursday night when you want to go to an exciting basketball game. So a lot of good things happening.
Coach, yeah, there are a lot of good things going on right now, Rutgers, and for your program in particular. We appreciate your time. Great having you here on the Junior NBA Coaches Corner podcast. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. And Monica, enjoy Vegas there. Ron Harper tonight. So make sure
definitely you gonna go check out Ron.
Terrific. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Monica and Dallin each week on the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. For more, go to juniornba.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.